Thanks for tuning in for this podcast of The Catholic Cave, presented by Catholic Radio Indy. If this programming is of value to you, please consider making a financial donation to support our efforts in producing these offerings. Go to CatholicRadioIndy.org. And now, here's The Catholic Cave. For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford in the cave with me, your favorite troglodytes, Mr. Mark Tuttle and Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. If you hadn't guessed by now, this show is pre-recorded. And today, the day we are recording this particular episode, just happens to be the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Yay!
And so we're going to take a look, and I'm just going to toss out the question. Our Lady of Guadalupe is a symbol of life. So how does that tie into the pro-life movement here in Indiana, in the United States, and throughout North America? She is the patroness of North America.
Right, yeah. She's kind of a double patroness. So she's the patroness of the unborn, as you mentioned, and she's also the patroness of North America. So, you know, when Our Lady of Guadalupe is celebrated, we usually associate that with Mexico, because she's also the patroness of Mexico specifically.
Sure.
So, but, you know, she's the patroness of all of North America. And I really feel an impetus as A, an American Catholic, and B, a pro-lifer, that we need to do more to kind of adopt her into our, I guess, sort of national calendar as American Catholics.
Yeah, she is the exemplar, right? So when you think about, when I think about like the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, one thing that you notice if when you look closely is that she's pregnant. And so that's another reason why she's the patroness of the unborn.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. She's pregnant. You can kind of see that a little bit in the image, but more importantly, the garb that she's wearing, her clothing
is that
of a pregnant maiden. So, you know, that sort of, I guess you have to know a little bit about the culture, or be told a little bit about the culture to kind of pick that up. But so she's the patroness of the unborn. And obviously right now, you know, we've got a crisis as far as abortion goes within our culture. Mm-hmm. You know, the numbers have been coming down. It was just reported that nationally the CDC's numbers, we can get into what the different numbers mean, but the CDC's numbers have indicated that the numbers of abortions are down about what they were when Roe versus Wade was decided, which is...
Thank God.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm a little skeptical that that's actually quite accurate. I mean, there's some reasons to be skeptical of that, but it's still reason to celebrate that, you know, culturally we've moved it down. Legally speaking, however, the fact of the matter is the Supreme Court restricts states from being able to outlaw abortion. And so, you know, abortion really, in theory, is still the law of the land throughout all 9 months of pregnancy for any stated reason that that woman would give.
Yeah, that's the 1-2 punch, I call it, of Roe versus Wade, but Doe versus Bolton on the same day. One legalizing abortion, the other granting abortion access for basically any reason.
Right. Now, the good news is there's a lot of restrictions that have been put in by most states. And so functionally, you know, abortion is really, like in Indiana, abortion is pretty much practiced through the first trimester. And after that, you know, the legal restrictions pretty much restrict it to first trimester abortions. There's a few of them that are in the second trimester, virtually none that are in the third trimester in Indiana. And other states are similar, but you do have states where, you know, you do have late term abortion facilities. Maryland comes to mind. Colorado comes to mind. The state of California, it's a mess. California. It seems to be getting worse. They're responsible for about 10% of the abortions in the entire country, one state.
Wow.
And the restrictions that are in place are being peeled back. And I, you know, they tried to float this through. Luckily, almost miraculously, the governor vetoed this bill that would have required college campuses to start performing abortions.
Right. How horrendous.
And that bill is going to resurface again in the California legislature coming up, because the forces in favor of abortion have actually gained ground in their past election, which is, I mean, I didn't think there was much more ground to gain there. So that's a real sad situation. And, you know, something to add to your prayer lists, the state of California.
Are you familiar, Mark, with what's going on in Ohio? Now, there's some threat that, who's it, Kasich is the governor, that he's going to veto a pro-life bill? What's going on there?
Right, correct. There was a heartbeat bill. And okay. So this bill basically says that anytime after a heartbeat would be detected, which is, you know, about mm-hmm. eight weeks, 12 weeks in pregnancy, mm-hmm. Mid first trimester, because there's a sign of life, abortion would be, illegal at that point. The Supreme Court has made no bones about it that this definitely would go against Roe versus Wade. So the question is, well, would the Supreme Court reverse course if it saw it? But at least with the rulings that are in place right now, it would seem that would be unconstitutional. So Governor Kasich, the last time this bill was passed, he did veto it. There's question as to whether he would veto it again. But there's also question as to whether there's enough votes in the legislature to override that veto.
Do you know what his rationale would be for vetoing it? Just the unconstitutionality of it?
Yeah, it would basically be a big legal fight that the state of Ohio would be in.
They'd
have to pay for, and they would ultimately lose. Right. Is kind of his rationale, and
so he's got kind of an economic almost.
You know, and I think there's also a legal argument that could be made that the situation with something like that going to the Supreme Court and being lost in the Supreme Court
sets precedence,
would further cement abortion as the law of the land. So I think some concern there. So, he's got his advisors. He's going to do what he's always been kind of a little bit of a moderate Republican.
Right.
So it seems like he would probably veto this again.
Okay. What else is other things as we're winding up here, 2018, Mark? What's on the horizon for 2019, do you think, in terms of pro-life news and views, as our good friend Kathy Humbarger would say?
Yeah, well, I think the good news in the pro-life movement is that the numbers of abortions continue to go down. And there's three significant numbers, really, when you look at it. You've got the number of abortions. Okay. And as I said, the CDC just came out indicating that, you know, those are getting close to where they are, where at the time Roe versus Wade was decided.
Okay.
You also have what's called the abortion rate. And that is the percentage of women who have an abortion compared to the percentage of women of childbearing age within the whole population.
Oh, okay.
So there's lots of factors that go into that one. That one could be just numbers of pregnancies going down. So mm-hmm. the numbers of pregnancies going down are going to, increase the numbers of abortions going down. That number also has gone down and seems to be at similar levels to where we were when Roe versus Wade was decided.
Okay.
And then the final one, and this is the one I find to be the most important one, it's called the abortion ratio.
Okay.
And that is the percentage of women who seek abortions compared to the number of women who are pregnant. So this is the percentage of women who are choosing abortion versus who are choosing life for their child. And that one for the last couple of years has been at levels that are at the same level, if not a little bit lower than where we were when Roe versus Wade was decided. Mm. So what all that means, and there's a couple of takeaways from that. Culturally speaking, the United States is where we were when Roe versus Wade was decided. We've reversed the culture to a certain extent, to where a woman in 1973 was just as likely or more likely to seek abortion in 1973 than she is now. And the pro-life movement deserves a huge pat on the back for that, because right the reason on. For that is the efforts to make sure that every pregnant woman doesn't feel like her only choice is abortion. She's got right. pregnancy resource centers she can go to. She's got community resources she can rely on. Every woman who's pregnant is supported. That's the goal. And the pro-life movement has done a good job moving in that direction. The other takeaway from that is that in a lot of ways, the legality of abortion means less and less. If you think about it, you know, before Roe versus Wade, abortion was illegal in a lot of states, and we still had an abortion rate and an abortion ratio that was similar to what we have right now. So the legality of abortion means less and less. The cultural movement, which we've been making huge strides with, is more and more important, and that's going to be a trend that continues in the future.
Well, that's very encouraging news, actually. You know, there's been, you know, in the 40 plus years since Roe v. Wade, there's been enormous efforts. In fact, one of the key features, I think, of the pro-life movement has been the March for Life, right, on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, or close to it, depending on inaugurations and things like that. So, Mark, I know we've got the March for Life to D.C.'s coming up this year, but there's also a local event. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. We'll be having the second annual Indiana March for Life here in Indianapolis. Woo-hoo! Yeah. So that'll start at 1:30 down along Georgia Street. People will be
gathered. Is it Jan 22nd?
January 22nd. And okay. So the March for Life in Washington, D.C. is going to be the Friday before that. So that'll be Friday, January 19th, I believe.
Okay.
But the one here in Indiana will be on Tuesday, January 22nd, which is the anniversary of Roe versus Wade. So
the actual date. Yeah.
The actual date. So if you can take off time from work, if you can take off time from school, bring the kids.
You got it. I'm calling in sick.
I know several. I know several of the area Catholic schools are planning on taking busloads of kids down to that. So the march starts at 1:30. Prior to that, there will be a couple of religious services. So there'll be a mass at St. John the Evangelist, there on Capitol.
Father Nagel,
exactly. That'll be at noon. And then also at noon in the convention center, we'll be holding a memorial service for the unborn. We're trying to make this as an ecumenical, a event as possible. So regardless of your religious disposition, you know, honestly, even if you're not religious, I think you'll find this memorial service to be appealing to you. So, you know, it's important that we take time to kind of take stock of the numbers of babies that we've lost, because even though the numbers have gone down, it's still a staggering amount of loss of life every year. So those services will be at noon, and then after those services, we'll gather there along Georgia Street, and we'll march to the monument, the Soldier and Sailor Monument.
That's not real far, is it?
No. And then we'll continue our march to the state capitol and gather on the south side of the state capitol for a rally, hear from some of our political officials, some of our religious officials. I think Bishop Doherty from the Lafayette Diocese will be speaking at that.
Oh, wow.
And so we'll cap it off with kind of a mass rally there at the State House.
Yeah, we're coming up on a break, but one of the things I'll point out, if you need more information about that, listen in here on Catholic Radio Indy. We'll be running spots letting you know when, where, who, and how on this local march. So we're going to take a break here on the Catholic Cave. We'll be back with more right after this.
Have you been married and have since divorced? Do you think your marital status prevents you from coming to church? Most Catholics and non-Catholics unfortunately have a lot of misconceptions about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Pope Francis has recently encouraged all people with questions about marriage to make an appointment and talk with their parish priest. As Catholic priests, we look forward to the opportunity to help you on your journey through life. Please make an appointment to speak with the priest today. We are and will always be here for you.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a ministry reaching out to Central Indiana and beyond. We have information available about what's happening in parishes here in the Hoosier Heartland, as well as access to the latest from Rome, plus apologetics and authentic Catholic teaching. We are your source for 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave on this very special edition that we are recording on the feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe. I'm Mark Tuttle here in studio with Timothy O'Donnell.
Hello.
And Kent Blanford. And we were just talking about Our Lady's special role as patroness of the unborn. So we have recourse to her. We ask for her prayers for a continued rejuvenation of the pro-life movement and a renewed respect for the sanctity of all human life here in the United States. But that's not all we pray to her about, right? She is also the patroness of North America as a whole. Mm-hmm. So she's the patroness of Mexico, but she's also the patroness of all of North America.
Yeah, I think with Our Lady of Guadalupe, it's, I think, traditionally been seen as a primarily Hispanic devotion. But she is glorious enough for all of us to engage and ask for her intercession. I think one of the ways in which I converse with Our Lady of Guadalupe and one of the special petitions I bring to her really is for that of conversion, for my own conversion, as well as the conversion if I have a special need of conversion. Because what through her apparition, as I understand, you know, it's right at the time of the Reformation. And at the time of the Reformation, of course, there's a great falling away, a great schism within the church. But in Mexico, you have quite the opposite. You have maybe as many as 5 million indigenous people becoming Catholic in a very, very short amount of time due to her intercession and her apparition.
Right. And, you know, the culture, the Aztec culture that was in place in Mexico at the time.
Horrendous.
Was a brutal, brutal culture of death.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think the reason that she's the patroness of the unborn is partly, as Kent said at the beginning, that she did appear as a pregnant woman, but also because she is responsible for completely converting probably the closest thing that we have to our current culture of death that we've seen in human history.
Right. You know where that's depicted brilliantly is in Mel Gibson's movie Apocalypto. It's not for the faint of heart because there's some pretty violent scenes, but that's because the indigenous religion, the Aztec religion, was engaged in brutal human sacrifice. To sun gods and other gods with a small g. But that movie Apocalypto, if you want to see a pretty realistic portrayal of the culture that the missionaries encountered, that's a good one.
Right. And, you know, the funny thing about Our Lady of Guadalupe was all she did in reality, you know, I say all, I mean, this is actually a big thing, but all she did was she brought the presence of Christ into that culture. Mm. You know, just the presence of Christ there, the light of her son and her bringing his presence, her doing what she always does, and that is magnifying our Lord, her bringing him into that culture, that alone converted the culture.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful story. And I love how Holy Mother Church, from a liturgical standpoint, we have December 8th, Immaculate Conception, December 12th, Our Lady of Guadalupe, and then tomorrow, right, is the feast of St. Juan Diego, right? So right there, you've got like a trifecta, Mark.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because, you know, and unfortunately, poor Juan Diego, I think he kind of gets a little bit lost in between these three magnificent feasts. You know, his coming in third place there among them, you know. But, you know, from what I know of Juan Diego and what I know of the history of his life, I don't think he'd have it any other way. Right. You know, he was a very, very humble man.
Yeah, the humility.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, once again, just as on the feast day of Immaculate Conception, it was the point is made that without Mary's yes, we would not have had the incarnation. Right. Similarly, without Juan Diego's faithfulness, we would have never had Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Right. Had he not responded to Our Lady's request to intercede and with the bishop to have a church built, he may have never, you know, it was his faithfulness. We would have never maybe had that app. We would have never had the Tilma for sure.
Right, definitely.
And that's still. I'm gonna guess that there's. I mean, there's literally millions of pilgrims that go see that Tilma every single year down to Mexico.
Right, and you know, Juan Diego's example is one of courage. Because, you know, he was a peasant, and you know, it was there was a
big deal to try to persuade a bishop.
Right, exactly. A big deal to try to persuade a bishop. Right. And not only that, but Catholicism was not huge.
Right.
So, you know, Catholicism was still very much the minority religion.
Right.
And so for him to have the courage to step out, A, as a Catholic among his peers, but then as a peasant to go and approach the bishop with this, what had to have seemed very strange, bizarre, miraculous tilma that he had, that took a great amount of courage for him to do that.
I agree. And that it shows the, you know, the power of evangelization, too, that by when we say yes to God's holy and perfect will, he's going to give us the grace that we need to accomplish what he wants us to accomplish.
Yeah. You know, when we look at American culture, there's a lot that we can be sanguine about. You know, a lot that we look at and kind of it makes us fearful. It makes us anxious. I've got kids. You know, I don't know what kind of world my kids are going to grow up in. But I think the example of Juan Diego shows, you know, the power of our Lord and the power of Our Lady's intercession to convert entire nations back to being, at least for a time, being devout and being Catholic.
So, Mark, let me ask you, if you would describe, what's your relationship with Our Lady of Guadalupe? Do you go to her with special requests,
you know,
or petitions?
For me, she is the patroness of the unborn. And so, you know, the prayers around the pro-life movement, her intercession, I ask for her intercession for the pro-life movement, her intercession for the abortionists, for those who are actively taking life, that she would intercede on their behalf and bring them to conversion so that, you know, they would use their skills. These are people who are tremendously blessed by God. God's given them great powers of healing, and yet they're using them for evil purposes.
Right.
So asking her intercession that they would be converted and use their gifts to heal and to bring about life rather than to destroy life. So I ask for her intercession in as far as the pro-life movement. I have to admit, I have not been as good at turning to her as the patroness of North America and asking for her intercession for, you know, our whole North American culture, because it really has become kind of a continental culture that we've created here in America. We've corrupted Canada to a certain extent, and we're well on our way to corrupting Mexico. So
one of our biggest exports is pornography. So right there's a huge problem, right?
Right, right. So, you know, turning to Our Lady as the patroness of really, honestly, our entire culture, I think is an important step. And I have to be one of the first to admit, I do not turn to her in that role as much.
I need to do more of that myself. There used to be this beautiful devotion not that long ago, 30, 40, 50 years ago, where it was common for us to adopt countries like the Soviet Union and pray for their conversion. And that's what we need. We need the intercession of Our Lady of Guadalupe for the United States. You know, we have a special role, I think, in world affairs. So for both our role internationally, but also domestically, pray for her guidance and her intercession.
Right, right. You know, the United States has such potential just from our own natural lights. You know, I find it interesting, you know, our lives are governed and we follow God by following the teachings of the church as they've been revealed to us, but also by following that natural law that's revealed to us through our lives as human beings and being in touch with what it means that we're made in the image and likeness of God. And the United States has carved out for itself a special place, I think, in world history as being one of the first countries to be completely, I think, on board with that vision of who and what humanity is based on natural law, based on what we know about humanity and what we know just simply from the idea of being made in the image of likeness of God, and as it's put in our founding papers, being endowed with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as God-endowed rights.
Well, that's a great point. I wonder, Mark, one of the terms that comes up from time to time is nationalism. You know, that's made some headlines recently. What do you think, from a Catholic perspective, what do you think is a proper understanding of, say, nationalism, and how might nationalism and patriotism be related?
Well, that's a big debate right now, I think, mm-hmm. in the Catholic world and in the world in general. You know, as the world has become more and more of a global marketplace, and, you know, in Europe, it's becoming more and more of, I think, a global confederation where, you know, the ties of nationality are becoming weaker and weaker, and the international ties are being strengthened. You know, the assertion of what it means to be a nation, what it means to be a country, and whether that is sort of the natural state of things, that's becoming more and more debated. And I think that the church historically has played the role as kind of the, I guess, protector and bestower of nations. You know, we talk about France, we talk about Spain, we talk about other countries as being daughters of the church. And, you know, those roles of protector of the faith that comes from having a realm to a certain extent.
Yeah,
a
sphere.
Sphere, almost. Mm-hmm. I think that the church has, for a long time, played that historical role of dealing as the church, as the minister to the nations. And so I think we're losing that sense of nation a little bit. The church is having a little bit harder time finding its role of who do we communicate with? I mean, who do we preach to if we're not preaching to the nations?
Do you think it's that impulse towards globalization that seems to be sort of erasing national borders or national identity?
Well, I think there's a twofold push me, pull me thing going on. You've got this move towards international trade and globalism, but you also have a move towards individuality,
sure.
Individual rights. And we're losing any sense of collective community. So the bonds that hold us together as communities, the bonds that hold us together as families, the bonds that hold us together as parishes, and sort of those bonds that pull us together as a church, those are becoming weaker and weaker. And what you're having are sort of, you know, honestly, what Hobbes described.
Right.
You've got Leviathan government sort of being the protector and bestower of the rights of little individual atoms that are running around and don't really have any other relationship between themselves other than being citizens.
Well, with that, we're coming up on a break. So you're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest, or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a voice for the church that's seldom heard in our chaotic world. We're confirmation for the strong of faith and encouragement and answers for those in doubt. We're there to rejoice with your triumphs and to be a voice of consolation through the dark times. We're a voice for vocations and proudly pro-life. We are Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
And welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm still Timothy O'Donnell with Mark Tuttle and Kent Blandford. Mark, right before the break, we were discussing kind of nationalism, patriotism, but the broader theme of the program really has been around this feast of Our Lady Guadalupe, patroness of the Americas, patroness of the unborn. I think we would be remiss if we didn't bring up contraception.
Right, right. You know, one of the things we pray to Our Lady of Guadalupe for is a conversion of our culture. You know, as we mentioned last segment, you know, Our Lady was responsible for converting the entire Aztec culture of death. And John Paul II pointed to our current culture in the West as a culture of death. And so we pray to her for the conversion of our culture, but that conversion has to start with the renewal and rebirth of families. You know, Our Lady is also known as patroness of the family. And, you know, that renewal has to start. And at the bottom of the breakdown of our family has been contraception and what contraception has done to family. Paul VI was almost prophetic in the way he described what would happen to our culture if we embraced contraception. And it's hard not to look at our current culture and say, yep, he was right on just about every point.
Yeah, we just had the 50-year anniversary, right, of Humanae Vitae. And, yeah, the breakdown due to the widespread use and acceptance and even promotion of contraception has just been devastating on the family.
Right. And you know, the church's teachings on contraception, unfortunately, have been mysterious to most lay people, partly because the church hasn't done a great job of explaining why a mother church teaches against contraception, and partly because there's been just such a blanket rejection of the church's teachings against contraception. I think the statistics are alarming. You know, I think it's something like, of those Catholics who are faithful and go to church and go to mass regularly, a minority practice the church's teachings in regards to contraception.
Yeah, there was a presentation I was at recently by one of my students, and on contraception, and natural family planning didn't even make the list, Mark, in terms of as an option in terms of contraception or in a better way to think about natural planning anyway, it's a way to really optimize fertility or avoid pregnancy for good reasons.
Right, right.
And it's a complete, and I understand why it didn't make the list, because it's a completely different way of thinking about our fertility, our and sexuality, really.
Right, right. And, you know, at the bottom of, I think, our culture's problems is the change in our attitude towards children. You know, children have become a burden or been seen as a burden, and rather than a tremendous blessing for families. And that has, that has changed our focus away from building families to continue to build a culture, to continue to build a nation for the future, to continuing to do what I need to do now to get ahead in my own life.
Right.
And so I think that's kind of the first manifestation of this sort of contraceptive mentality that really, I think, is at the root of most of our society's ills.
Yeah, I think too, part of the contemporary thinking towards children is, we're going to have two children maximum, because the future I envision of raising those children into, you know, productive adulthood, one means probably raising them through the age of 25 or 30 these days. Two, it means an incredibly busy schedule between school and all the extracurricular activities that we're going to be involved in. And then three, the costs that are associated, especially with the assumption that every child is going to go to at least a four-year university, if not grad school on top of it. You very quickly, as a parent, you start calculating all that, the time and resources, and you start thinking, well, we can't possibly have the time, energy, resources for more than two children.
Right, right. And economics doesn't work that way. You know, I think that's you have all these grand economists making pronouncements of, well, you know, the world really can't care for families larger than, you know, two children.
Oh, there's the whole
family.
Environmental pressure. You start thinking about, you know, the Tuttle family's carbon footprint.
Exactly, right, 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 yeah.
And driving around in that minivan.
Yeah, but then, yeah, you're very right, too. The home economic outlook of that, how can you have a household that's really going to be able to provide enough? The fact of the matter is the economy adjusts to the number of people, the number of consumers, the number of workers, not vice versa. You know, right. Those things don't get adjusted by...
It just doesn't seem that way,
it doesn't seem that way, exactly. But basic economics indicates, you know, the economy grows and declines based on the number of people, not vice versa. And so, you know, if more families did have more children, the economic situation would change. And so that would become more. The problem is when you look at it relatively and sit there and say, I have five kids, my neighbor has one. Does put me at a disadvantage.
Right. That's, I think, though, it's again, through parish life, it's through knowing people who and seeing families that are larger and getting to know them and how they actually manage their householding, I call it, right? It's how do you manage your household? That's a critical skill that, boy, the last generation or two, we don't even teach anymore in schools. I mean, home economics got thrown out with, I'm going to blame feminism, you know,
right.
A strain of feminism, because it seemed like it was preparing women to be housewives. And of course that became seen as politically incorrect, but the practicality of just being able to run one's own household is incredibly important.
Right. And the economics of it, I think, played a huge part of it.
Sure.
You know, what we had before we had the whole feminist movement was we had the growth of the welfare state.
Right.
And as I mentioned before, the growth of Leviathan. And what that tends to do is it tends to move all of those responsibilities, all of those duties, and quite frankly, all of those privileges of being able to take care of you, being able to take care of yourself, your family, your extended family for multiple generations, and it shifts that to society at large.
Right.
So suddenly the idea of, you know, I need to have four kids so that they can take care of me in my old age, and that they can also take care of my grandkids, and that they can continue, you know, to move my family legacy forward, that's all contained within my family unit. When you shift that and say, no, we're going to allow the federal government to step in and take over those roles of taking care of people in their old age, of taking care of the needs of the next generation, you know, education wise, et cetera. You suddenly don't need more people in your family.
Right.
As a matter of fact, it becomes a burden to have more people in your family. And not only that, but the role that a mom plays and the role that a dad plays, that becomes subsumed by the government. And so you got to carve out a new role as what? A producer. And
right.
So you have to go to have right. any sort of self-worth, you have to find that in the marketplace and in the world of work and jobs. And so you create this new relationship where you have workers and the government rather than families.
Right. And I think you, to a certain extent, you almost have like a surrogate kind of relationship with your employer, because it's you're describing, it's this producer consumer homo economicus mindset that you've sort of supplanted or replaced familial relationships with a relationship with an employer.
Right. And we started this whole conversation by pointing out what's at the root of this. And at the root of it is the idea of contraception, the idea
right.
that I am going to intervene to take control of what really is a sacramental relationship between husband, wife, and God.
Right.
And that sacramental relationship is a relationship of love that ultimately overflows under the blessing of children. Contraception short circuits that, denies that, and in a lot of ways, you know, is sacrilegious within the sacrament that is marriage.
Right. Well, in St. John Paul the Great's encyclical, which I highly recommend, I know you recommend it too, Mark, the Gospel of Life, Evangelium Vitae, it's clear that contraception's sinful, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. And it's sinful because it's a disruption of that sacramental
Correct.
Understanding of marriage. You know, marriage moves from being something that's a blessing on the husband and wife because it's endowed by God and because it's administered by the church and because it's an encounter with God that we have within our life as Catholics, that becomes changed to a social or economic, you know, contract that's signed between a man and a woman that is possibly disposable. It's possibly something that could be extended to other types of relationships.
Well, no-fault divorce is another, I would say, plague on us too.
Right, and that, I think that's one of the fruits of contraception. I think
right. I have to be able to get out of this relationship pronto.
Right, exactly.
No-fault divorce.
Because really, this relationship is there for, you know, my benefit and her benefit, and if it seems like neither of us are benefiting from it, well, then,
or maybe I'm not benefiting.
Right, we need to, you know, we need to dissolve it.
Yeah, in fact, that one of the biting ironies of no-fault divorce is that in no-fault divorce, the state sides with the person least committed to the marriage because you don't need any reason to get divorced. You just simply file. And the state comes alongside and makes it happen. And it's I don't mean to be too flippant when I say this, but in some regards, you know, it's easier to get a divorce in terms of the paperwork and going through than it is to you know, as a minor to get, you know, access to a tanning salon.
Right. Yeah. And
or I mean, get your ears pierced.
Right. Yeah. And any other type of contract, you know, to take out a loan to purchase a car, you know, the ability to,
you're going through more vetting to get a car loan than you are to get a no fault divorce.
Right. Exactly. And the ability to dissolve your relationships with the banks.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The banks don't just let you walk away.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Because well, we're coming up on a break, but I want to continue this conversation about contraception, what the church teaches, why the church teaches it, because it's so misunderstood, I think, among the laity. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You are listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Keep Jesus at the center of our day all day long by having those words in the background.
It touches lives. It does every day.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave on this day of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Actually, we're recording on the day of Our Lady of Guadalupe. You are listening to this several days later, but our recording schedule at least puts today's show on this great feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe that comes in. The church puts these festivals in series of three, if you haven't noticed. You know, you have the Triduum around Easter, and now we've got this great trio of the Immaculate Conception, Our Lady of Guadalupe, and the Feast of St. Juan Diego, just right in a row. And so we're celebrating Our Lady of Guadalupe. She is the patroness of the unborn. She is the patroness of North America, but she's also the patroness of families. And we've been talking about, in a lot of ways, we've been talking about the breakdown of families and the reasons for that within our culture. But at the heart of it, Paul VI was quite correct. At the heart of it is our culture's embrace of contraception.
Yes. So, Mark, when we think about contraception, one of the things that I think there's a lot of confusion, misunderstanding, or just people just don't know, why does the church teach that contraception is wrong?
It goes back to what the church teaches about marriage and what the church teaches about marriage as a sacrament. And it also goes back to you know, Pope John Paul II's theology of the body. A lot of people think Pope John Paul II, quote unquote, invented theology of the body. He was just espousing and explaining in much more detail and using kind of the modern philosophical technique of phenomenology to describe what the church has always taught. Right. About man and woman. So, you know, his lectures on theology of the body are in the context of biblical exegesis, of looking at when Jesus is asked about divorce and why divorce is unacceptable. He says, you know, it goes back to the beginning of when God created man and woman to be together. And so the whole idea of theology of the body goes back to what God created man to be, what God created woman to be, and how their complementality leads to the permanent relationship of marriage. And at the heart of that is our sexuality. Mm-hmm. And disrupting that and taking that out of the context of a sacramental relationship between man, woman, and God, contraception disrupts that. And it alters that relationship between a man and woman. And by altering that relationship between man and woman, it alters the relationship within the family. And by altering the relationship within the family, it alters all of our social relationships.
Yeah. So the sexual intimacy that should be confined to marriage has that two dimensions of both being unitive and procreative. contraception tramples upon the procreative aspect of it. And so that's the disruption that you're talking about.
Right. And the two are inseparable. So when you take that
So when you try to separate them, trouble happens.
Right. And ultimately, a lot of trouble. Yeah, exactly. Ultimately, when you take that procreative nature out of the sexual act, you in the end also remove the unitive act. And,
right.
And you know, I think young people are probably more aware of this, even if they don't consciously think about it. The dating relationships and the sexual relationships that have evolved in our culture have become increasingly less and less personal. You know, mm-hmm. we've created this hookup culture where, you know, a lot of times there's a sexual relationship between a man and a woman that they probably wouldn't even go out for dinner together.
Right.
And so, you know, the lack of personal relationship there has increasingly become problematic.
Yeah. It's a really an objectification of the other person, right? You've turned them into an object to be used. And I think that's why these relationships are, among, you know, young people are, you know, first of all, they're difficult to begin with anyway when you're young. But once you add that mix in of a hookup culture, a hookup mindset, where we meet, we have sex, and then we're going to try to figure out if we like each other, right, and date from there. Getting things completely out of order just is disastrous on these relationships. And a lot of people get, you know, emotionally and spiritually damaged as a result.
Yeah, if you really want to see this illustrated, you know, taking up a winter reading list. So, you know, it's cold. Light a fire in your
fireplace. We love books on the Catholic
exactly.
Cave.
So light a fire in your fireplace. And these are enjoyable books I'm going to recommend.
Okay.
Do yourself a favor. Read some of Jane Austen's works.
Oh.
Pride and Prejudice.
Yes.
Mansfield Park. Really any of them kind of contain that ethos of marriage for the sake of continuing the family and building the family, and that's what marriage is about, is creating family. Read those, and then after that, in contrast, read Aldous Huxley's Brave New World.
Oh,
where
you're going to give us a brain sliver.
where procreation has been completely industrialized. And so the idea of
which is kind of our current setting,
right?
To a large extent.
And notice the contrast in human relations there, where sexuality is recreational in Aldous Huxley's Brave New World that he creates.
Right.
It's
kind of cathartic in a really deranged sort of way.
It is.
Too.
It is.
Right?
Yeah.
They kind of orchestrate these.
And you know, Huxley was a socialist. He was not a Catholic.
Right.
I don't think he was. Okay. And he saw what was coming from contraception with his own natural lights.
Right.
You know, his own light of reason, he kind of saw what the consequences were going to be.
Right.
And
this industrialization of the human person.
Exactly. Yep. And,
very dehumanizing.
And it starts by removing the procreative aspect from sexual relationships. As a matter of fact, his main character, that's what he tries to get back to at the end of the novel.
Right.
Is creating a family. So, you know, Huxley recognized that all of the fallout that happens in his post-apocalyptic world comes from separating the unitive from the procreative act of sexual intimacy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not lost on us, is it, that the target so often of terrible ideologies is the family, the destruction of the family. I think of like communism. Like you can't really the project of communism rests in large part with the dismantling, destruction of the family as one of its dominant features.
Yeah, and you know the irony in a lot of ways of our culture is a lot of the evils of communism that you know generations prayed for the conversion of Russia because communism was so evil and so wicked. But a lot of those evils that were forced upon those people by a totalitarian government, we are not only adopting, but we're paying good money to bring them into our own houses, and we're adopting them voluntarily. We're paying for them. So, you know, the dystopia of Big Brother, of a state that watches over your every move and keeps track of what you're purchasing and keeps track of, you know, what to supply at the stores and when and how.
Or maybe even keeping track of your diet.
Exactly. we pay a bill every month.
Sure.
for companies to keep track of this.
Right.
You know, the dismantling of the family, as we've been talking about, in a lot of ways, our culture has done it voluntarily. And we've reached a state of the breakdown of the family that I think the Marxist that started off the Soviet experience could only have dreamed of. Yeah. You know, wow, we've got a culture where, you know, half the children are wards of the state. They're born outside of wedlock, not to a family, but now, you know, their allegiance is to state apparatus and government. You know, this was the ideal of the Marxists, and we've kind of, you know, incorporated it by our own choices.
Yeah, it's shocking and amazing how far we've fallen in that regard, Mark. I mean, yeah, having such huge numbers of children born to single family, typically single moms, where dads are just this crisis of fatherhood. And we've talked about it in other programs too here in the Catholic Cave. This absence of fathers and fatherhood is just, it's just devastating. We were, you know, talking a little bit about how these relationships, you know, between men and women, the hookup culture is facilitated in large part by the absence of fathers, because guess what? As a dad, you're not going to let your daughter be treated in such a cavalier way as the hookup culture would sort of set that table.
Right. And contraception also looms large in that picture as well. You know, when you don't,
absolutely,
when you don't have the prospect of a family and you don't have the idea that, well, you know, sexual intimacy is for the purpose of bringing forward children. So therefore, we're not married. We don't intend to have a family. So we're not going
to
do this.
We ought not to use those powers.
Right, right, right. When that's taken out of the equation, suddenly any children fall on the woman. You know, right. the guy can really take an attitude of, you know, the contraception was your responsibility. You
right.
failed in that. You didn't adequately contracept. You didn't take your pills or whatever. And now you're pregnant. And guess
you've
what?
You've got a problem.
You've got, well, not a problem. You've got a choice.
Oh,
yeah. So, and guys can look at women now and say that. It's your choice. You know, you
leave me out of it.
Leave me out of it. It's
right.
your choice.
It's awful.
And so, you know, and you think about the absence of abortion and contraception. If you had the absence of both of those on the college campuses, how that would change dating and how that would change the dynamic between men and women on your average college campus.
It'd be dramatic.
It would be.
It would be dramatic and for the better.
And I think if you ask college kids who aren't Catholic, who aren't religious, who aren't Christian, I think if you went and polled them and said, you know, look, if there wasn't contraception and there wasn't abortion, how would that change the dating dynamic on campus? I think they would quickly see that it would be for the positive.
Right. You'd have to have a complete rethinking and reimagining of courtship and dating and the permanency of marriage and why marriage is a good and ought to be pursued. All of those things would probably begin to resurface as worthy of their consideration, but also their dedication.
Right. We would start to move from the world of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World back to the age of Jane Austen. And, you know, I say the age of Jane Austen, I recognize it's not all it was cracked
yeah.
up to be, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It was a very patriarchal, yeah. very misogynistic in a lot of ways type of culture. That's not the point. The point was the family relationships that allowed families to develop. And, you know, that certainly does not automatically lead to patriarchy.
No, it doesn't. Well, we've spent the entire show kind of beginning, and let's end with a veneration of Our Lady of Guadalupe. That's how we kind of began the show. That's sort of the theme that's run out. Patroness of the Americas, patroness of the unborn. Mark, what's sort of your final thoughts here on this great feast day?
I think we as Americans are missing out on a great opportunity of turning to Our Lady of Guadalupe for intercession for most of what plagues our society. You know, we just got through an election season. There was all sorts of talks about what we need to do to save America, what needs to happen to make America great again. And I think Our Lady of Guadalupe set the example when she appeared to Juan Diego that it's Our Lady's intercession, and it's turning to her as the patroness of the unborn, as the patroness of North America. We have an opportunity to make America great again by turning to her.
And that is all the time we have for the Catholic Cave for today. I'm Kent Blanford for Timothy O'Donnell, for Mark Tuttle. Our Lady of Guadalupe, pray for us. Until next time, may God bless.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.